Welcome, everyone, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue 9.5, the amazing reviews of comics. So we're going to dive in and we're going to get you some really good reviews quick and fast. So get ready for it. Who wants to go first?
Who's got the timer going?
I do.
So I guess I'll go first because these are going to be quick. So Marvel's Generations is such an amazingly meh series that they're going on right now. So in front of me I have The Mighty Thor and The Unworthy Thor, number one, written by Jason Aaron with art by Mahmoud Asrar. Sorry for butchering your name. And I also have Generations Hawkeye and Hawkeye, written by Kelly Thompson. And artist by Stefano Raffaella. Also, sorry for your name, Stefano. So these series, I'm still reading them just because they have some of my favorite characters in them, and I feel like that's what Marvel's banking on. It's just so meh. It's the same thing every issue. Starts off with a big fight, two characters come together, talk for a while, big ending fight, closing couple pages of dialogue.
I wouldn't even say even in the Hawkeye one there was a big ending fight. It was a, hey, we fought.
Yeah, it was, yeah, and in the Hawkeye, yeah, you're totally right. They're just like, meh, we're good.
Yeah.
So, all of these, exact same comic, different characters.
I mean, really? I've only read the Hawkeye one, and that one I was like, and I, so that's 20 minutes I'm not going to get back in my life.
Yeah, this is my third. I read the Wolverines, and then Thor, and then...
I was looking forward to the Thor one, except I was a little angry at the cover a little bit, because she doesn't look like her typical Thor self, where I know in this, like, with her, she's definitely one of the, like, wonder what, like, she looks like an Amazon, except she's a human.
Interesting.
From my understanding.
Yeah, no, once she has the hammer, she's actually, like, usually illustrated pretty, like, pretty beefy, but yeah, I didn't even notice that, like, on the cover, she's kind of,
I noticed it because of how many female characters that we have that are, like, you know, the size of my pinky and can, like, take down a full-grown six-foot male.
Yeah. I don't really, yeah, because usually, yeah, just, like, looking at her arms here, like, usually in the Thor comics, she's got some muscle on her, and in this, she's pretty much, like, I see, like, cancer-ridden Jane Foster arms.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
Damn.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of the appeal that I had with that Thor, is they didn't make her the typical stick female. I liked that.
Yeah. So, yeah,
so they all know each other. They're all best friends. They've known each other. The Thor and the other Thor, the Hawkeye. They all know each other.
No, it's like
so
they're back in time. Is essentially what it is.
And this is another reason why it's not good. No explanation. Just they're back in time. The new character meets up with the old character. Boom, done. In the end, they all mysteriously vanish back into their time. So I'm with you, Leander, on this. Fuck time travel.
It's just depressing because it could be so cool because they're meeting them in their prime and then they're like,
All right.
I'll jump in here. So we've got Star Wars Mace Windu, Jedi of the Republic, longest title ever, number one. Actually, I think the Phasma title has the longer one. Anyway, this is a new Star Wars title. It's a miniseries written by Matt Owens with pencils by Dennis Cowan and inked by Roberto Poggi. I'm saying that because I think his art or his inking sort of cleans up some of the sketchiness that Dennis Cowan is normally known for. This is a issue that takes place literally right at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-mm.
No, excuse me, end of the Attack of the Clones. Wrong Star Wars movie. when basically Mace Windu is grappling with the idea of the Jedi not being peacekeepers, but being generals
and leaders
in the Clone Wars, which is an interesting idea, especially with we equate Mace Windu with being more of an aggressive Jedi in general.
Well, not even that. He's always sure of himself too, and in this way, he's so unsure of everything.
He is, and I enjoy that. It shows a sensitivity because normally we see him leading, and he has conversations with this one in Yoda where he doesn't have to be the superior Jedi at that point. You know, it's fine to be submissive to Yoda and listen to his advice. I enjoyed this issue. It wasn't this breakout thing. I do love the artwork in this. I don't like in the Star Wars books when they try to make them look exactly like the actors. I mean, it looks like Mace Windu. It doesn't look like Sam Jackson. Right. It looks like Mace Windu.
That's a good point.
Those are not the same thing. I really enjoyed this. It separates itself from the rest of Star Wars canon because it's kind of a unique time period. You also get to see the Jedi in stealth suits because they're going on a recon mission, essentially.
I enjoy the fact they have, like, a semi-Daredevil kind of character.
You know, and the blind Jedi thing, I'm glad they're touching on that more because Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels is blind and uses the Force to see. So I think it's I like the fact that there's precedent set in that's something that is, it's useful for the history of the Jedi. But I really like this issue. It's fun. It's definitely a great number one jumping on point. So I'd say pick it up, especially if you're a Star Wars fan.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it was pretty good. It's weird trying to see him in that role of, I'm not sure, because in Revenge of the Sith, he's like, I'm sure of everything I'm doing!
Well, it's the perspective. It's who is he talking to when he is like that? Well, he has to be a leader in front of others and has to present
it makes me curious if he ever gets over those doubts, though. That's the curiosity that sets forth.
He is the one to discover that there's a plot against the Jedi, so...
Mm-hmm. Oh.
If you think about it, right. in Revenge, he has that moment.
Alright, now I need to go home and watch Star Wars.
After you watch The Crow.
Yeah, that's right. I gotta watch The Crow first.
That's right. Alright, well, I guess I'll jump into my review. I'm gonna do Dead of Winter by Kyle Starks. And those of you who read the original or the Cajun Scouts East Coast, however you want to say it, we know Kyle Starks pretty well, and he's been on our podcast a couple of times. So first time we ever interviewed him was in the basement, and he said the number one thing I want to do is podcast and play Dead of Winter. So he loves the game, I love the game, we had this bond over it. So he wrote a whole book for Dead of Winter, a comic book for Dead of Winter. And based on the board game. And I thought it was really well written. His favorite character, Kyle Starks, is Sparky, the dog. Which makes sense as to why he's on the cover and to why he goes throughout this whole situation. And the idea is that Sparky in the game is so badass. It doesn't even make any sense. He can, like, ride cars and carry guns and shoot guns, and it doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Can this dog be my home? Can he be, the protector of my home?
That's basically what Kyle Stark wants you to think.
I'll even think about, no, I won't ever leave my cat. I love him.
So but, for those of us unfamiliar with Dead of Winter...
Yes, Dead of Winter is basically a board game in which is a zombie apocalypse, and they're coming to take over your camp, and you have to go out and sometimes get supplies. So the whole premise is you getting supplies and coming back, getting supplies, coming back. And so this book goes right with it. It introduces characters from the game and gives them a little bit of backstory. Kyle Starks also writes himself into this book. He is the guy with the hockey stick with a kind of like piece of sharp metal at the end of it so he can like cut people's zombies' faces off and stuff like that. And he doesn't like throw any punches. He says when it introduces the guy, he says Ruckus Burley, which is actually him, and he calls it says Gabriel Diaz, who's the fireman, right? And then Ruckus Burley, white trash, is what he calls himself. Like, and that's how Kyle Starks talks to himself, is about himself, is in that kind of way. And so you get the story in which you kind of get a little background story of Sparky, which you don't get in the game. You kind of find out he's just in this book, just like in the board game, he's a badass, and he basically hates every kind of zombie. If it's a zombie, he will take it down. He'll be the first one to take him down, which is pretty awesome. Then they go back, so basically, Gabriel Diaz and what I'm going to call Kyle Starks go back to the home base and say, hey, there's an issue, there's a problem, we need more food, because now we brought on, they found 3 survivors, so now we need more food. So they're like, all right, we have to go back out again, which is the whole game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you bring survivors back in, you have to go back out and get more food and such. And so the premise of this is they go back out, because they have to get to the police station to get more firearms, right? Which is where you would find firearms at the police station, just like the board game. Mm-hmm. And stuff happens, things go down, and what everyone who plays the board game is so excited about at the very end, Mall Santa comes out. Now, it doesn't make any sense for those of you who do not play the game, but that is one of the best characters. So be prepared for that. And I'll leave it at that.
Awesome.
Like Mall Santa? All right. I guess it's my turn. We'll talk about some background number 14, because I was pretty excited about this. I saw basically she's going to work with Nightwing for I don't know how many issues, but her and Nightwing are working together, and it is written by Hope Larson, and it looks like our pencils is Chris Wildgoose, which I, your name is awesome.
Sounds delicious.
Alrighty, moving on. So, this is like the first exposure I've had to Batgirl, and honestly right now I'm definitely enjoying it. It's pretty interesting seeing, like, in my mind, because I remember her from the Batman animated series, her and Dick Grayson were always a thing. So, like, seeing them in this, they're not a thing. And she's very quick to draw that line in the sand. Like, she's just like, I'm not, like, she even says, I'm not your girlfriend. Like, specifically draws the line in the sand.
Wow.
Like, it's really weird. And, you get some flashbacks of Dick Grayson when they first met and they're first together. And you see him as Robin, which is, like, really weird to see sometimes, too, because I was like, what the hell? So you get the flashbacks of when she first shows up into Gotham and her first meeting and her interactions with Dick in the beginning. Like, he knows who she is, but she's not super sure who he is yet, which is hilarious because there are some puns in there. You definitely will enjoy them. I'm excited for the next one. I'm pretty sure that they broke up Nightwing and, what was her name, Sean, I believe? I'm pretty sure they broke them up so they could put Nightwing and Batgirl together. Mm. Like, I'm pretty sure that's gonna happen. Like, she drew the line in the sand, but we all know that line
that's
is
more
meant...
tension.
Yeah. We're supposed to draw the line in the sand so we can cross that
yes,
line.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So... Let's close on. Yeah.
Oh, look, he gets it, guys. But, I mean, I enjoy it. Like, I don't actually know a whole lot about Batgirl in, like, the mm-hmm. Rebirth universe, whether the, you know, she was paralyzed at some point, or Oracle, I don't actually know. That would probably be a Nat conversation, but, yeah. I mean, I definitely enjoy it. You're seeing parts of her and Nightwing that you didn't necessarily get before, and, of course, you just see them when they first work together, too, which is really interesting.
That's really
their
cool.
First, yeah, their first pairing, so I thought it was great. I'm excited for number 15. Everybody else should be, too. I'm just saying. It's going to be great. I hope so. Anyways, because if I get let down, you're all going to hear about it.
Well, we'll hear about it here on Caves and Scouts West.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Good?
All yeah. Right.
Nice. That sounds good. Okay, so for me, I got Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 22. This is by Brandon Montclair and Natasha Bustos. Also, sorry if I mispronounced your name. So, I've loved this comic since the beginning. It kind of took a slump when Amy Reeder quit. Just the creative team that came up with the characters was Amy and Brandon. So, Brandon's just writing now. But this comic really picks it back up. This is, like, the fourth into the storyline. And just to give a little setup, Moon Girl goes out into space to basically help out Ego, the living planet's daughter, who is a moon.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a girl moon. So Moon Girl, yeah, there's that whole thing. This issue, though, is, like, really interestingly sad. It deals a lot with loneliness. She goes out to help the girl moon to basically find her father in space. And there's this whole thing about being alone in it. There's this great part when, like, there's two of these, like, rock formation girls there standing next to each other. And then, like, Moon Girl kind of pulls them together into, like, one. And she's talking and... She's like, there's basically two kinds of bad people in the world. Those who are greedy and those who are afraid. And then it goes into how loneliness especially can make people, like, both of those things. Like, greedy for somebody and also afraid of being alone. And then it draws this interesting comparison to Moon Girl, obviously, and Devil Dinosaur being this great pair. Like, they're friends, they love each other, but... You know, Moon Girl's the smartest person in the Marvel Universe, canonically, and Devil Dinosaur is a dinosaur. So, like, she still feels that loneliness. Also, there's this great B story here of, since Moon Girl's in space, she's left these 10 moon bots, which are basically robotic versions of her, to, like, carry out her daily activities, go to school... be in the house, and Moonbot number 7 is going through this existential crisis where it is kind of becoming sentient, and it's talking to, like, this doom head that she has for various reasons, and there's this great panel where the Doom, where the Doombot head is like, there are 10 of you, Moonbot 7, and Moonbot 7 replies, that is incorrect, there is only one number 7.
Mm.
And so, there's like, yeah, so there's just like great, and then like on the next panel we have like Moon Girl being like, why am I here? In the existential way, not like physically in space. And then Devil Dinosaur is kind of freaking out because he's a dinosaur in space. Like, what the hell is going on? And then I kind of want to just end on this really, really depressing quote that I found when I was looking through just, like, philosophy of loneliness. It's by Jean Vanier, who's a Canadian humanitarian and theologian, who says about his experience in a children's hospital. He said about going there, not one child was crying. When they realize that nobody cares, that nobody will answer, then children no longer cry. It takes energy. We cry out when there is hope that someone may hear. Which,
on that note, I want to go cry in the corner.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Jeez.
So,
if you hear soft sobbing, it's okay. I just gotta get it out.
That's really how I feel about that issue.
Nice.
And, yeah.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, I'm gonna switch gears.
Yeah. Yes, make us happy. Make us happy.
So, we got Go-Go Power Rangers number 2 from Boom Studios. This is really a character piece, and I think that's what the main strength of this title is.
Oh, damn it, I really should have read that.
This is by Ryan Perot, and Dan Mora is the penciler inker. It's dealing with the earliest days of the Power Rangers. Right after they do the Megazord, they go to the moon, come back, meeting Rita. They feel pretty screwed up, like they had messed up because Rita knows their names. And this is just more character stuff, them feeling each other out, feeling out their powers. There's this beautiful moment where Trini takes Jason aside and is like, we should go full on Power Ranger and beat the crap out of each other to see what we can do. And it's
that is
awesome.
Legitimate.
Yeah, it's really cool because she's really, really smart, and she's portrayed as, you know, being kind of a bookworm, and it's like just blowing off steam.
Mm.
And they do a lot really character relationships in this. There's a little bit of a confusion of time jumping because they kind of go back and forth before the incident, so the first time that the aliens arrive. And
so it's like a little convoluted.
Yeah, so it gets a little convoluted between where characters are. Thankfully, Dan Mora is one of the most skilled illustrators at faces that I've ever seen. So each character looks different.
They're, definitely have two things from him. They're amazing. I got a Teen Titans, and then I got a cover. They're beautiful. I love them. I need to get them framed.
He understands the difference in nationalities of characters without making it
obvious.
Yeah, without making it obvious, but it's clear. There's identifiably different. Mm. The characters that are overweight look natural. They look like they're overweight, like they're normal people. Just really beautiful illustrations takes. It's all character beats. Each character gets a moment to shine and to show how the event is affecting them. It's a little bit like just high schoolers dealing with the fact that there's a bigger world out there and that they're a part of it. And there's a more sinister Rita in this, which I really enjoy, that she's taking a different approach and she's going to send a new monster to Earth, but it looks like the end quote is, the most terrifying monster is the one you never see coming.
Mm.
So trying to make something humanoid that will maybe...
That's the one thing I love about this series, is the fact that, like, when you're a kid, you don't realize, it's like, they're superheroes, they're so cool! And then, like, as an adult reading this, I'm like, oh my god, in these comics, they're actually making sacrifices.
Yeah, there's a lot of insecurities amongst them. Mm-hmm. It's a really good character piece. I think this is stealing the energy away from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers book. This is the
coincide really well, though. Yep. That's the one weird thing I'll say is they do. They definitely like match up. Like when I saw it the first issue and the last issue that I read before that, like, oh, I used to be afraid of heights. I'm afraid of heights. I was like, what the hell?
So the characters feel like the same characters.
Yes,
nice.
That's good.
Do they have like a Power Rangers universe thing going on, something like that?
Maybe.
It's mostly just they went back before, like, this is before Tommy, and I'm hoping that they'll actually touch on how Tommy becomes a Green Ranger, because it doesn't, I think when the Mighty Morphin just jumps into him
being
the Green Ranger, everything's said and done.
And
nothing,
after being the Evil Ranger.
Yeah, after being the Evil Ranger, too. That's what I'm hoping they're going to touch on, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Go-Go is a must-read, though.
Yes, it definitely is.
I like it. Heard good stuff so far. So I'm going to review America with Gabby Rivera as the writer. So this is issue number 6. I just jumped in. I read the first one, and the second one I think I didn't care for at all. I dropped it completely. And I'm like, let me just see what's going on in America. The comic.
You don't,
because I don't want to see what's going on.
I was
in
like,
America.
Don't look outside yourself. You're not gonna like it. No one does.
So this is basically a dating issue for America. This is basically about her ex-girlfriend coming back into the scene, and she basically backstabs her quite literally and takes her into a boxing ring, and they're forced to fight each other because the bad guys have taken the ex-girlfriend's father and said, if you want your father back, kill America. And so, and so they get into this big fight, and eventually, what I love about, the only thing, what I really like about this book is, and this is going to be weird after whatever, everything I've said so far about her, Kate Bishop. She's actually really fantastic as America's best friend. She really is a really good best friend character.
Everything we've talked about has been a lie.
Yeah, I know. So, in this issue, she comes through as a best friend. She is just open. She's an ally. She's everything you want out of a character. But that's, I feel like this is where Kate Bishop should be. She should be right here as a side character supporting America.
She's like, you're just like, don't you dare put her in the forefront ever again. You leave her over here.
Leave her here in America where we have a great relationship together. But it's a really good, interesting issue of someone who's super strong can jump between dimensions and is dealing with dating issues, right? So I think that's what America is trying to show you in this issue, number 6. And I think overall it was really well framed. On top of thinking about putting them in the match together, the person who's put this all together is Arcade, which is really cool. It's a character to throw Arcade into America, as a villain. And there's all villains watching the fight as well. They've all paid to watch the fight. Mm-hmm. And on top of this, if you paid VIP money, you get to go into the ring and kill the winner on top of it. So, it's a pretty... I mean, it's Arcade. I mean, Arcade does that. That's his level of insanity.
He's making a shit ton of money right now.
He's making a lot of money. The one thing that is kind of weird is that throughout this entire issue, what you find out is that there's another America who's older, and we don't know why she's here and why she's helping. And at the end, spoiler, I guess, it ends up being her grandmother. So this is America's grandmother. And no one knew. She never knew her family really at all. So this is the first time you get a link into her family, her extended family.
I just have one question about it. Because I read the first two issues of it and I dropped it mostly because it was kind of a little convoluted of storytelling. Mm-hmm. There was just too much going on and it didn't really seem to be going anywhere.
Yep. That's why I dropped it
interesting.
Too.
Interesting. How would you say this is, like, storytelling-wise?
It's better than that, for sure, than how it started.
You said that with a sigh.
It's a little still convoluted because of the whole grandmother situation. She really messes it up. I feel like we didn't need her. She just made this convoluted for no reason. It was a solid story until the grandmother came in, jumping through portals.
Basically, they're, like, running through the hallway, and all of a sudden there's ice. You're like, what shit?
Right.
That's basically why I dropped it, though. I was like, it's great writing, but you can stick with, like, two of the storylines.
Yes.
You don't need to have four extra storylines on top of the two good ones.
Yeah, I think America hasn't hit the mark yet, but they're getting there. So we'll see. But issue number 6, check it out for yourself and see what you think.
Cool.
All right, next.
Let's talk about some Edge of Venomverse number 5. Ooh. We've made it through all 5, and now we're actually going to be in the Venomverse coming this month, guys. Woo! Woo-hoo. So the first one we've had, it was the new Wolverine. And then we've got Gwenpool, Ghost Rider. I will say out of all of those, that one probably creeped me out the most. Like, it was just straight up creepy. And then the fourth one was Old Man Logan. And our fifth one is Deadpool. So overall as a series, I'm like, pick up number 2. Gwenpool was great. It was hilarious. That was the one that I definitely loved the most. Even with Deadpool. Like, I was hoping Deadpool would be funnier than it was. It mostly just made me not want to eat for a day. Because it gets, you run into him where he's runs into basically a bunch of, like, giant tapeworm parasites. It's disgusting. It's gross. It's like a bunch of worms inside people and then worms trying to get inside him. It's just nasty. It's really, really gross. So if you want to read this, don't eat, because it's not a wise decision. It was pretty, I was kind of grossed out. For an overall, for like the beginning of it, it gave me like I really think it was an opening to the story. It was, here's five different characters, and we're pulling into this one universe. There wasn't any, like, oh, hey, this is what's happening kind of deals. It was, oh, hey, here's a character, here's a character, here's a character. They're all going somewhere else.
Huh.
What?
Sounds like Generations.
Yeah.
Sounds
like Generations.
Yeah, because it's not really... Like I said, my favorite was Gwenpool. It was mm-hmm. really, really funny. They're all definitely standalones. Like, they don't really... There's not really any information on what's actually happening in mm-hmm. Venomverse until we get there. It's just like, hey, by the way, here's five characters that we put some... we want you to see who have the symbiote on them. Enjoy.
Yeah. The idea that Venomverse is going to be the next arc, like, the next big thing? Like, Empire happened, and now we have Venomverse. Like,
I think that's what they're trying to do.
Is there ever going
to
be a rest? Or is there not an event happening?
Legacy's happening.
Yeah, they're, like, smashing through. They're like, alright, how can we make money today? I know.
Oh,
but yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they're trying to do with this. I mean, I'm not like, I was really kind of disappointed in the Deadpool issue. I was hoping it'd be more funny than it was. I was mostly just like happy I didn't eat. Because I was just like completely and utterly grossed out from most of this issue.
I've been finding that a lot more, especially with the Deadpool comics. It's kind of evolving into something that's not really the sort of like lol memes kind of stuff that Deadpool,
like, he's got his funny moments, but not like I remember. Like, I remember reading about like 2 or 3 years ago, I read it as it was a trade paperback. The entire paperback, I was in tears. Like, laughing so hard. Not tears from sadness, but laughing so hard. And now I'm kind of like, meh, I read this, and I was like, this is not that fascinating. And, like, I read Gwenpool, and I'm like, this is freaking hilarious. That's what Deadpool should be, is Gwenpool, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It does. It makes total sense to me.
And it's kind of depressing a little bit, because I remember reading him. I remember when he had a plunger for a peg leg and a blind chick as a navigator. Like, like, I'm a little saddened by how not funny it was, so... Mostly disgusting.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Who's next?
I see a big one over there.
I guess I'll go. So this one's kind of a little bittersweet. We got the Black Panther and the Crew number 6 and the last issue. There's one part that I really want to touch on this, because, like, one of the things that makes this an amazing issue, now that it's done, you can go pick it up and trade paperback probably pretty soon. Just the themes running through it, so on point, modern day stuff. Before I get into, like, where it's going from here, I just want to, like, there's one part in the flashbacks. Each of the issues has a flashback to, like, the 60s, with this previous crew, basically. And,
with Ezra as
yeah,
the leader.
Ezra,
at
who's,
some point.
Yeah, he dies in the first issue, and that's what sparks the modern crew coming together, is this investigation into why he died in his life. And, they eventually become super, like, this, one of the first superhero groups, to sort of start taking down crime. But then ultimately it kind of corrupts their team a little bit, like, they get a little power hungry. And we get this great conclusion to that sort of thematic arc, I guess. Not necessarily plot arc, but this character is talking to Ezra, and she says, Frank thought he could dismantle the Empire with the Empire's tools. By the end, he didn't care where those tools came from, but Frank was wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was just so poignant. Like, trying to fight fire with fire and ending up getting burned with it. Like, these aren't... Like, this isn't the way that these people in Harlem should be trying to fight for their civil rights, which is with these mm-hmm. things that is used to oppress them, basically. And then, this is very interesting. Just great thematic arcs in general. And then, we get some interesting tie-ins. So this came out the same week as the main title, Black Panther, actually. So I think we're gonna see a lot of the crew continued in it. So we get... halfway through, little spoilers, we get, what's her name? Do we even ever get her name? She's the main villain from
A
Nation
arc.
Under Our Feet, which is the first arc of the new Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
She's dressed all in green. She has, like, the ability to
amplify
emotions. And it turns out she's kind of like behind this in a weird way, like for whatever reason. Because she's not, even though this has been a Hydra story, she's not really affiliated with Hydra.
That we know of.
That we know
she's
of.
She's wearing green, I'm just saying.
She is wearing green.
That's a good point.
But it's supposed to be, in the Nation Under Our Feet, it's more because she's supposed to be like this natural, mystic, shaman kind of person.
Right, in Africa.
Yeah.
So while she's in Harlem, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But then
that green's
also,
not blending in anywhere.
But then also in the main Black Panther title, we get Shuri, who's T'Challa's sister, actually going to America and finding some weird things there. So I think there's definitely heavy plans for Ta-Nehisi to begin writing both of these together.
Yeah.
In a way, for sure. So also 17 Black Panther is getting a lot better than the last couple ones, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. I would only add that you can tell that Black Panther and the Crew was cut too short because if you when you read the trade, look out for it, Luke Cage does zero in this entire book. He does nothing. He doesn't throw a single punch because there's not time. There's not enough time for him to finish the book and write him punching anything. So that's kind of
or even
just,
taking a bullet. Like,
or even take a bullet. Yeah, the only thing that happens is his house blew up. That's about it.
He was pretty pissed off about that. That leaves to Defenders and I believe Jessica Jones.
Just that look on his face too when he walks out of that house like after a rocket blows up. Like, these motherfuckers.
That's pretty much what it was. Agreed. Alright, who do we got next?
Alright. I've got the Dark Side Oversized Special. This is the Kirby's 100th anniversary, so it would have been Kirby's birthday on Monday, actually. So he would have been 100 years old. This is written by Mark Evanier and art by Scott Collins. Fun, crazy little throwback issue. This is really about a couple of resistance fighters who escape Granny Goodness's orphanage, and they spend a few years basically being terrorists against Darkseid on Apokolips.
Find that like the most funny thing to put too. Terrorists against Apokolips.
Well, yeah, I mean, truly that's what it is. You know, they're resistance fighters, but you know, it's all about perspective, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Let's not talk that way.
there's a lot of apocalypses on both sides. Okay.
Oh gosh. Anyway,
we need to stop that now.
I mean, this is really it's a golden age issue. It's really designed to feel like. Something out of the 1960s, and the art's gorgeous. It's reminiscent of Kirby. Kirby dots and crackle, all the fun stuff, the Kirbyisms, and the Furies make an appearance. It's a fun read. It's really just a one-off, just an homage to Kirby and his greatness. And yeah, fun. I enjoyed it. That there's two other stories in the main issue. It's a $5 book, so there's a couple of other side pieces to it. Yeah, if you're a Kirby fan and you like Scott Collins especially, go ahead and pick it up. Otherwise, it's, you know, just stuff to celebrate. Nothing crazy.
Nice.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to review Secret Empire number... Wait, 8 and 10? How did I skip 9? All right, well, ultimately, that shows how much I cared about the book. I only picked up 8 because it had the Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite cover on it. That's
nice.
The only reason I picked it up. Not because I actually cared about it. And then I'm like, well, now that I have number 8, I guess I should read the next one, which apparently is 10.
We don't have to count it.
I feel like with the continuity of Secret Empire, I would not be surprised if even their numbers were out of order.
So ultimately what you get here is, from just pure understanding, there is another Captain America that was brought into our universe by the Cosmic Cube or Cubic. So that's why he's evil. He's not the real Captain America. The real Captain America is stuck inside the cube trying to get out. So, yeah,
that's why there was the whole big thing of Hail Hydra. I was like, it's not Captain America.
It's not Captain America.
There's no way.
Of course not. So, ultimately what it comes down to is this book really is trying to make you love Cap Falcon because he is, like, at the center of this whole entire thing. Like, he rallies everyone together. He is the hero. He is the hero of the day.
And even at the end, ultimately what happens is Kubrick says, oh, I think I made a bad decision. Here, Captain America, go back to where you were because I'm omnipotent and I can do whatever I want. And so then the Captain America and Captain America have a fight. And then our Captain America wins, of course. No one saw that, you know, everyone saw that coming. It had to be a one-on-one fight. Everyone said, oh, we're not going to jump in. It has to be a one-on-one fight between the Kubrick's... Anyways, so at the end
heroism.
Of the fight...
Heroism.
At the end of it, ultimately, Captain America, our Captain America, picks up Thor's hammer, smacks the other Captain America.
Oh, what? I would love to see that.
Then, yeah, that's cool to see. And at the end, Captain America gets his shield back, and he says, well, this is not my shield. And he hands it over to Cap Falcon and says, you're the only real Captain America right now. And so that was really good to kind of show, like, no, so you know, despite what everyone thinks about this Captain America, we are going to still see Sam Wilson as Captain America.
But we're not.
But we're not. But we're
maybe that's
not.
The most confusing
because
part
in Legacy...
It.
Sam Wilson is now Falcon. He gets his own title as Falcon for the first time. And Steve Rogers is back as Captain America.
Yeah,
because
the whole
Legacy.
Point of Legacy is them bringing back all of their characters. So you should have...
Yeah.
I feel like...
Cough, Iron Man, cough.
Secret Empire... I don't understand now where did this Captain America take over to? Like when was Hydra Cap?
Because
it's old. Well, I mean, the Captain America in there looks like old school Cap with
old school Cap.
Pirate's boots and pirate gloves. You
but
know?
Like, who knows what Kubrick can do? She could probably time travel him back to being younger, and now you're. Hey,
time travel.
Yeah, time travel.
How do you feel about time travel?
Ultimately, I hate it. And so, the only other thing I thought was really cool about Secret Empire that maybe make it worth to. I want to watch at some point in time is the Defenders plus Doctor Strange are in like this black dome and they're trying to save New York on their own. Like they're cut off from everyone else. So I kind of,
like
and
that.
Cloak and Dagger. So Cloak and Dagger, Doctor Strange, and the Defenders
I
were all together.
That.
I would love that. And when I saw that in here, I was like, oh my gosh, that happened? I don't know where, but it happened somewhere.
I'm going to find it.
So it makes me want to go read, I guess, the Defenders or wherever that's happening. I want to read that.
I don't know if it's in the Defenders. I don't know where it's hiding because I'm reading Defenders right now. And
that's not happening
no,
there.
No,
okay.
Does Doctor Strange actually have mystic powers or is it Doctor?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems like none of this has any continuity bearing whatsoever. I have no love for this whole idea of Secret Empire.
It
honestly feels as
if it was a standalone, it would be awesome. But
you know what this is? This was the event that Marvel had decided that they were going to do things differently, and issue one came out, everybody went, oh, hell no, and Marvel completely changed their entire direction of what they wanted to do, came out with Legacy, and rushed out 10 issues of a story that also doesn't end at issue 10 because there's a Secret Empire Omega.
Yeah, so basically we're screwed. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So is it over yet?
Can I
look now?
Issue number 10 is done. It's over from issue 10. But ultimately, pick it up for the funness of it. Don't think about it. Think of it as a separate universe, and you'll love it. Done.
I don't know if Matt can do it.
Just write a separate universe story. They exist. We reviewed something called Nightwing New Order for DC Comics. It's a separate universe.
I think DC is a lot more familiar with the separate universe than
it's because
Marvel.
DC,
they,
that's all it knows is separate universes. Like, there is some moments in time where I'm like, can this be one?
Yeah.
What universe?
What
universe am I in again?
It's like there's the two sides of it. Like, DC can't pick one universe to stay in, and Marvel can't expand on its universe to the detriment of like the central like universe that it's in. So guys, you can get out of your comfort zone, DC
it's
and Marvel.
Okay.
Like
maybe
you can
talk
have...
a little bit. I know you hate each other, but
yeah,
talk a little bit.
DC, you can have continuity. Marvel, you can have uncontinuity. Like it's fine. Both y'all.
It's all okay.
Alright, I see one more over there from Kat.
Honestly, I think I might kinda side because I can do this in like a minute. The Supergirl annual. It's basically, it's issue number 13. It's nothing special. It's just going into the story more. It's basically, the Emerald Empress has decided that she's going to create a Fatal Five, and she is going to basically screw Supergirl's reputation. So, with the people and with anything and everything she can possibly do, she brings in Indigo to now be the new hero of National City. It's, I mean... Read number 12, because you're not going to understand 13 without 12. Like, or not 13, the annual without 12, because it's like... Wait, what's happening again? Because it's like, all of a sudden, you're like, wait, why is Supergirl out of control? Why can't she control her powers? And it's like, you find that out in 12, she gets shot with some weird gun that makes her powers go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, This is still, I don't know. I was hoping for more than what I got, and
for an annual.
So
I haven't really read Supergirl though.
Oh, I was gonna ask, how is it as a run so far?
I mean, Nat looked kind of disappointed over there.
I'm still on Secret Empire.
He still hasn't gotten over that.
Still has not gotten over it.
But there is one thing I want to talk about. It's a little late to the game, but I want to bring it up. Batwoman number 6.
Ooh.
I loved that issue. Like, you come into this universe where it's all of a sudden you're in the future now, because I was reading it and she's like dealing with something on some island, and all of a sudden now she's in the universe, and I was like, what the, she's like 50. I was like, what the fuck's going on? And so I'm like reading this and she's like, I need to stop this. This needs to stop now. When her, I can't remember who the name of the girl who she's with, but she's like, well, you know, you shouldn't have stopped them. And she's like, no, you're right. I completely should have stopped what was going on. And you realize that Gotham is like this territory that's completely taken over, and she's not even allowed within Gotham at all.
What?
Yeah. And it's leading into a story in Detective Comics. So now I got to read that. Thanks, DC.
You complained about continuity just now.
Yeah, it's true.
Shut up.
Go for what you wish for.
Right? But, you end up in this, like, and she runs into Renee Montoya, which I can't remember. I don't believe she's dating her in Rebirth. And she's like, she gets hurt, and she's like, oh my god, and they still love each other. It's like, it was, honestly, I thought it was great. Out of all of the issues that I've read of Batwoman so far, number 6 has been by far my favorite. And it's completely off the story that they're even talking about right now.
Huh.
That's awesome. I was in the island situation.
Yeah, and I was like,
and then I stopped, and then so good to know that.
Yeah, number 6 was really good. I don't know what they're doing number 7. I mean, obviously, you'll all find out probably when I read it. But, yeah, number 6 was really good. I was actually thinking about it. I was like, you know, this Batwoman series isn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And then they brought that in, and I was like, what?
Nice. That's awesome.
So, I'm always... Matt's just over here upset, still, guys. I'm really upset at this point.
I'm doing my best Jon Snow impression.
Hey, Matt.
So, does anyone else have anything to review? Because I have my 1 minute and 6 and 1 minute situation.
He's got his pile.
I got
more Mother Panic.
Yeah, I got Mother Panic. I was just gonna say it's awesome. I just started reading it. It looks like they got a new artist. I don't like the way that... Oh, my gosh. So it's written by Jody Hauser and art by Sean Crystal. Sean Crystal, learn how to draw hands, please. I know hands are, like, the most difficult thing to draw, but just don't... And don't focus on them if you don't know how to draw hands. Like, I thought that I was like, oh, wow, I guess she has, like, weird, like... hands, because she's like some like, because she is, we learned in this issue that she's kind of like a genetic experiment, that she's basically like cut up and pieced back together. So I was like, okay, maybe she has like, you know, these weird genetic experiment hands, until everybody else in the comic has the same kinds of hands. I couldn't get over the hands, and usually the art doesn't bother me. I'm like more into the story. Great story, amazing writing, amazing character. Loving it. The hands, man. The hands. Like, stop. Just stop it with the hands already. Like, oh my god.
So you're telling me he's mentally prepared for hands.
Yeah, right.
Just every time you see a hand, just imagine it. This is like another DC alternate universe where people have weird hands.
Well, they look like... The best way I could put it, they look like rat fingers.
Yeah.
They do look like rat fingers.
Story.
Story's great. We get more into like her backstory. She's kind of like this like really like gritty sort of like alcoholic. She's like if Batman like gave less fucks and drank more. And
okay.
Like
It's great. I love it. Yeah. I read issue. I got all of the issues, and I read through number three, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Also in this, there's an interesting, like, predator versus prey analogy going on here.
I'm pretty sure her, like, catchphrase is fuck you, so.
Yeah, basically. I had to go back. I was like, did they put a mature readers sticker on this? Which they do, so should say it's mature readers.
It's mature.
Lots of drinking, lots of swearing.
So much swearing.
Yeah, lots of her just, like, choking out people in their beds, basically.
Just focus on the hands a lot.
I know. There's so much hands in this. It's like, oh, I've never seen anybody put this much emphasis on something they can't draw.
Wow.
I'm scared to see feet, man. Yeah.
So hands down, what would you give it?
Oh, man.
I'd give it two thumbs awkwardly way up.
That's the last thing that happened. I'm just glad to be a part of that.
That's awesome.
Okay, so that's my review of Mother Panic number 10.
All right. Well,
that comes in handy when you're picking out comics. Sorry, just one more. All
right.
So, I have a feeling there's going to be a few.
So Leander's going to try a 6 comics in 1 minute review.
Oh,
let's start the timer.
If
go.
I can do it,
is this going to be record setting?
I don't know.
Probably not, but we'll try.
We'll find out.
All right. DC's Harley Quinn After Rebirth, number 26. It is Harley Quinn's birthday. Shit goes down, and at the end of the day, she's running for mayor. So see if you want to pick it up. I didn't like it. The Uncanny Avengers, Marvel, number 26. You're jumping into the events after...
Secret Empire,
right. apparently, at some point, Scarlet Witch got possessed by a demon, and that was a whole part of the story as well. I don't remember it. And so now Scarlet Witch is trying to get back to Uncanny Avengers. It's not going to work out because Rogue doesn't like her, as usual. So pick up number 26. I thought it was pretty good, actually. Aquaman number 27. The art, fantastic. The story, okay. But the art, art, fantastic. Pick it up because of the art. Just put it in a gallery. Put it in your table, your coffee table, so everyone can admire it. Iceman, number 4. He's gay. And so... and he tells his parents. And then Dakin says, I can control you with my pheromones and make you love me. And then I'll try to kill you. But they make Dakin absolutely beautiful in this book. But it didn't quite work out. Generation X, number 5. I love Generation X. I will read it forever, despite what's happening right now, which is that it's horrible. All New Soulfire, number 6, by Aspen Comics. You can't jump into it. You have to start at number 1. 6 is not going to do it for you. You're going to be like, what's happening? So don't pick up number 6 until you pick up number 1. And I'm done.
Awesome. 1 minute and 20 seconds.
Ooh. That was still pretty good.
Take everybody else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely beat me, that's for sure. So anyway, well, I guess that will conclude our 9.5 review issue. So let's say bye, everybody.
Bye.